They were right about the dog. Valentine tried to tempt him out from under the train engine, but the dog bobbed his head, tail tucked tightly between his legs.
I know just how you feel, old buddy.
Valentine nodded. He extracted one of the blue-taped magazines from his ammunition harness. Valentine walked up to his foremost pickets and knelt.
Fall back with the rest of the men. I'll take point. You're relieved for now.
In more ways than one.
They were out there. Reapers. Use it. Use the fear. Valentine saw the movement in the brush. A peaked back, like an oversized cobra hood, rose. Valentine felt its gaze. Every fiber, every nerve ending came alive. He felt as though he could count the blood capillaries in his fingertips and the follicles on his scalp. Individual drops of sweat could be felt on his back. He opened the front grip on the gun, put the machine pistol tight to his shoulder. The attack came from the hillside. The gun went up without Valentine willing it, and the muzzle flash lit up a falling, grasping parachute of obsidian-fanged death. The next one was up to him before he could even turn to face it. The gun was gone, spinning off into darkness. Valentine fell backward and rolled. He came up holding his sword protectively in front, noted coldly that the Reaper he'd shot was clawing at its chest, foot-long barbed tongue extended and straining. The unwounded Reaper advanced at a crouch, a thin sumo wrestler scuttling insect-like in its squat. The inhuman flexibility of its joints unsettled. Your brain locked up in frozen fascination, trying to identify a humanoid shape that moved like a fiddler crab. Valentine backed up a step, opening his stance and setting the sword behind, ready to uncoil his whole body in a sweeping cut when it leaped. The shotgun blast struck it, sent it spinning away as unexpectedly as a jack-in-the-box yanked back into its box as Valentine's sword sweep cut the air where it would have been. B rose from some brush clinging to the small gravel swell the tracks ran along, other shotgun now held forward while she broke open the one she'd just fired with her long, strong fingers. Valentine turned towards the shot-struck Reaper as it ran away. His instinct was to pursue. If it was running away, it was damaged and disadvantaged. He forced himself back to his senses and his men.
Good work, B.
Valentine suspected that it was Glass who had the sense to fire the illumination flare. It lit up the steep-sided cut as it wobbled down. Valentine peered into the darkness, somewhere down the tracks that led toward the pursuing Quislings. He spotted a trio of tall, robed figures in the center of a column of advancing enemy. Valentine saw movement all around him in the dim light. The railroad cut was full of troops, walking their bicycles uphill in two open order lines up either side of the tracks, carrying their rifles at the ready so that the muzzles were pointed toward their open flanks rather than at their comrades. Valentine backed up a few steps, this time firing with his own flare as he retreated toward his line, more to highlight himself to his men. He was lucky that none of the advancing enemy had night scopes.
Check fire, it's the Major!
Valentine made sure B was following. She was backing through the brush like a living fortification between him and the advancing troops, and came up to his men. They'd stripped the boxcars of bed frames, thin mattresses, and water barrels, and improvised a breastwork, shielding it with cut brush.
Fire on my order. Single shots only, and take your time. Pass the word, single shots only. We're guerrillas, remember. All we've got are deer rifles and bird guns. Sergeant's on up. Have your pistols out with quickwood magazines in. Grenade!
The blast blew on the far side of the breastwork. He noted his men returning fire, placing careful single shots. Did the Reapers know they were chasing nothing but sheep and goats yet? The Quislings came forward at a rush through the brush as the assault intensified. He could see their heads bobbing as they advanced, the foremost less than 20 yards away, covering each other with bursts of fire.
Fire at will!
Valentine saw figures began to fall or dive for cover ahead of him.
Start the train! Everyone on the engine car! I don't want anything smarter than a goat on any other carriage!
A Reaper ran toward them straight up the rail line, a satchel held in each hand. The Kurian animating the Reapers must have been either desperate or determined to overwhelm them in an all-or-nothing gambit. B's shot missed, barely tearing the monster's robes. Valentine didn't need to wonder what was in the satchels or see the digital seconds ticking down. A sergeant, Troust, though the men nicknamed him Surf, as he combed his thick blonde hair into a wave on his forehead, appeared beside Valentine and rested his 9mm on a step of the caboose. Each shot was carefully aimed. Valentine duly noted his coolness, as though already composing the report. The Reaper stiffened, leaning oddly, and started a throw, but the blood drinker's fingers refused to release. The momentum of the satchel toppled it, and Valentine saw the astonishment in its eyes.
Get down!
Valentine covered his ears and felt the weight of Troust come down on the back of his head. Surf let him up, the weird, underwatery feel of the explosion's concussion sapping his strength and wits. A Quisling in a torn green uniform was at the barricade, staggering as he tried to climb over, and suddenly Valentine's backup pistol was in his hand. He realized too late that the man was trying to surrender.
Empty the caboose, Troust. Fall back to the rock pile as soon as the cars start moving.
He climbed into the engineer's cab. Valentine found Crow still posted, moving the barrel of his rifle at every sound.
I want you to uncouple as soon as the cars have a little momentum.
While the cars are moving?
Yes.
Roger that.
Crow waited until the tension came off the coupler, then pulled. Valentine extended his hand and helped pull him back into the engine.
Good job, Crow.
The sheep and goats didn't like the motion and began to leap from the train. First a few goats, and then the sheep, all in a rush. Some went head over heels as they came off in a mass, a waterfall of wool and tufted hair. The goat's instinct was to head for high ground, and the more nimble goats made the escape up the hillside first. The sheep stuck together in bawling clumps. Valentine lunged as Crow fell, catching his arm. Crow's toes skipped over the tracks. The train wasn't moving that fast, but the engine's tonnage could maim or kill even at a crawl. Valentine hoisted him into the engine.
Thanks, Major.
Time to hit the brakes. Not too much farther to the rock pile. Fall back! Fall back up the tracks!
The men moved towards the rock pile, NCOs tapping their charges on the shoulder and gesturing.
Move it! Move it!
The rocks were comforting in their thickness and sharp edging. There was good cover for shooting all along the fall. A crenellated wall and a medieval castle wouldn't have been more heartening. Valentine took shelter beside Crow. The Quisling rail soldiers came up the cut one more time, but Valentine's company poured well-aimed fire on them from their fortress. More sheep and goats fell than men, but the return fire was inaccurate in the dark.
Looks like they got a mortar up and running.
The fire corrected, and a shell dropped into the rocks. Valentine spotted Cabbage scrambling over the rocks toward the blast, the big medical pouch bouncing on his hip. The Reapers would come now, as the whole company listened to the sound of a man screaming his life out. Or they'd kill the men high on the hillside and then come tumbling down the grade like jumping spiders. But he didn't feel them. The only cold on the back of Valentine's scalp was from the chill of the Kentucky spring night.
They're coming! Brigade's coming!
Valentine felt a lump in his throat as he saw a wave of soldiers pour over the ridgeline to his right, taking up positions to fire down on the railway Quislings. Every yard the enemy had fought for now meant a yard they'd have to fall back under fire from support weapons on the hillside.
Cease fire! Cease fire!
Valentine saw hands go up, or men stand with rifles held over their heads, hurrying toward the rock slide to surrender. His company ran forward to group the prisoners and relieve them of their weapons. He felt dazed, half awake, with the smell of gunfire and smoke and livestock and sweat in his nostrils. The weird elation that settled on a man when he starts to believe he'd survived, won, picked him up and floated him back toward the foremost troops to report. Singh, frowning, sat in the passenger seat of his open-top Humvee. He returned Valentine's salute with a dismissive wave of the hand.
You caused me at least 2 days' delay, Major. Actually, more like 3.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'll take it. Gamecocks, Bears, and the Legworm Outriders are hitting the support train right now. And the Wolves are raising hell with some artillery tubes at the crossing they set up where you destroyed that bridge. A captured prisoner says their Kurian lord's in a panic. Disappeared into some secret area of his command car.
I've got wounded, sir. Can we set up a field hospital here?
Of course. This ridge is good defensive ground. I'll establish brigade headquarters here until our... stray sheep and goats are rounded up.
The fight already had a name. Billy Goat Cut. Valentine heard one of his corporals relaying the details to a guard sergeant deploying his men for a sweep of the battlefield to look for enemy wounded or hiding. Duvalier wandered out of the hills with Ediac trailing behind, his clerk looking like she'd just been through the longest night of her life. Duvalier carried a reaper head by its thin black hair. She stuck the skull on a rail-grade marker.
Found him lurking on the ridge, all dazed and confused. I thought I'd solve his problem for him.
Just like a cat. You always do everything, but leave it on the back step.
Wow! Check out that bad boy right there.
Don't mess with that, Corporal. You'll seize up and die if you get some of that black gunk in you.
It's safe once it's dried. That is, if you can handle the smell.
Good point there.
Duvalier rubbed some of the thick fluid between her index finger and thumb, then made a motion toward her mouth. Valentine slapped her hand down.
Cut it out, Allie. What is the matter with you?
I wonder sometimes.
Valentine's holding action was just one-third of the story. The bears, wolves, and assorted legworm mounted troops had fallen on the support trains like hyenas on a pair of sick cattle. Gamecock had found a piece of tentacle that looked like it came from a Kurian in the wreckage. It was already sealed in a specimen jar for eventual delivery to the Miskatonic. Of course, there was no way to identify the remains positively. Valentine imagined the Kurians weren't above sticking some unimportant former rival or inconvenient relative in an aquarium marked in case of emergency break glass, so to speak, should a body ever need to be left behind while the Kurian stuffed itself up a hollow tree somewhere or in the rear engine that managed to decouple and escape at full speed. Moitana's wolves had their own triumph, tearing up the artillery support hurrying toward the railroad cut. They were already working on chain harnesses so the legworms could haul the tubes up and down Kentucky's hill. Singh was wrong about the delay. It took 4 days to get everyone organized, the refugees and the two men too shot up to move, to a local brand. Miraculously, Valentine had no one killed in the fight. His only losses were wounded, and the jibes from the rest of the expedition. The rest of the march had its share of difficulties. Valentine lost 2 soldiers of his company, whether through desertion or simple loss he never learned. They took bicycles into a town that allegedly had a good, safe market and never returned. Singh was moving too hard to the northeast for Valentine to delay in searching for them. He led a detail in civilian clothes into town, but could learn nothing. B slept outside his tent like a dog. Duvalier brought home grisly trophies now and then, Quisling scouts, an unfortunate pimp who tried to drug her at the Trans-Appalachian Inn, a reaper who'd lost a foot to a bear trap. Word of Red Dog's reaper-sensing powers spread, and Singh attached him to brigade headquarters as scouting and detection gear. The dog went out with wolf patrols and nighttime picket checks. Red Dog's cheery enjoyment of his excursions rubbed off as they neared their goals. There certainly were pleasures to the march. Valentine loved the vistas of this piece of country. The old, round, wooded mountains had a tumble-down beauty and seemed to keep secret histories in the silent manner of aging former bells. Valentine visited the Bulletproof Camp and learned some of the ins and outs of the Kentucky Alliance. All the clans were powerful organizations, powerful enough so that the Kurians kept watch on them and sometimes started feuds to prevent any one from getting too powerful. At least that's what Zack thought, expressing his opinion over some well-diluted bourbon at one evening's camp. After a final pause that allowed Brother Mark and a pair of cats to attend a meeting with the guerrillas and the underground, they marched to a map reference point and made camp on a defensible hillside. It was well-watered, with a nasty rock pile to the north on one flank and a swamp to the south. Below, just visible between two lesser hills, was the town of Utrecht, seemingly chosen for its misty mountain environs and the echoes of history in its name. The representatives of the guerrilla army guarding the town seemed woefully undermanned, tattered, but well-armed. The Legworm ranchers mixed with them more freely than the Southern Command troops. With B leading the cart horses and Ediac sitting beside with the company fund, Valentine took a barter cart down into the valley and saw a better ordered group of men, perhaps in reinforced regiment strength, camped on another hill to the northeast of town. Thinking that this was the partisan army proper, he turned the cart onto a road skirting town and toward their pickets, and received yet another surprise when he saw tattered flags identifying the men as belonging to Vermont and New Hampshire.
Who the hell?
I'll be damned! Those are the Green Mountain Boys! Jeebus, all it's missing is a compliment of the Quebec Liberté for us to have every freehold east of the Mississippi represented here.
Valentine waved hello to a corporal's guard watching the road, but the soldiers just stared at him, waiting for orders from their superiors. They were good-looking men, wearing woodland camouflage, boots, leather gaiters, and a good selection of Kevlar. Most had combat sights on their assault rifles. On closer examination, Valentine saw what were probably masked gun emplacements on the hillside, and a headlog or two peeped out from covering brush at the edge of open hillside pasture. Anything short of a divisional assault on this hill, with armored car support, would be torn to bits. Their tents weren't laid out in an organized fashion, but in little groupings that made their gently sloping hillside look like it had sprouted a case of green ringworm. Camouflage netting covered some tenting and mortar pits. Others were open for the world to see.
That's you magnificent bitch.
Valentine's vision had come true, and then some. He'd imagined leading some wolves and technicians to the aid of the guerrillas. Lambert had taken that idea and turned it into something for the history books. It made him clammy just to think about it. Valentine turned into town. The campaign surrounding the Great Union in the Alleghenies near the town of Utrecht was one more men would eventually claim to be at than ever were. Or, if not themselves in person, a brother, a cousin, an uncle, or aunt, laid down like a trump card when veterans get together to talk about their experiences in the liberation. Only writers of lurid, exploitive novels titled the fight against the Kurian Order, The Vampire Wars. It's safe to say that Utrecht, West Virginia, had never seen such a feast, even during holidays during the Platinum Age pre-2022. The town square had a smaller square of groaning white-clothed banquet tables set up within. The old pedestal in front of the courthouse that had once contained a memorial to First World War veterans, replaced by a statue of a reaper holding a human baby up so that it could look up at the stars and happily sawn off at the ankles the week before when the guerrilla army occupied the town, had a new set of stairs, as well as platform and loudspeaker system for speechmaking. Most said Special Executive Karras had been working on a stem winder for months, looking forward to this moment. It was a rather old-fashioned Main Street type of town, and every third building seemed to be named after somebody or other. 19th century achievement emblazoned in Romanic letters in stone, ready to bear witness to their greatness, until wind and rain wore down even their gravestones. The civilians either were keeping indoors, were terrified, or had fled the gathering of forces. Valentine saw Southern Command uniforms mixing with the timber camouflage of the Green Mountain Boys, guerrillas in patched riding coats and legworm leathers. A trio of milk-shouldered girls in halter tops, plump and tempting, waved out to the soldiers from the expansive porch of an old Victorian mansion just off the town square. Valentine wondered if some entrepreneur had followed a regiment on the march and set up shop, or if it was a local establishment operating discreetly under Kurian eyes and now enjoying a quick gold rush of uniforms. Valentine saw a tower of fawn-furred muscle, back to him, moving through the crowd in the middle of a complement of men with foxtail-trimmed ponchos hanging from their shoulders. Just the sight of the grog's back made Valentine's throat swell.
Yo, a horse! Hey, uncle!
The men in back turned, and so did the grog.
Whoa!
It had a long scar running up its face and a fang missing. An eyelid drooped lazily. The other glared at him, keen and suspicious. It wasn't Anka. For David Valentine, out of thousands readying themselves for a party of special magnificence, the night held little promise. When he got back to headquarters, he had pulled himself together enough to institute a liquor search of his own, and three bottles had been emptied into the thirsty Allegheny dirt. Patel now had new miscreants for latrine and garbage duty. Though he'd laid out his best uniform for the banquet, the prospect of a feast had lost all its luster, and he decided not to attend. He swapped purchases he'd made in town for 24 duty-free hours after the banquet. He wanted quiet and solitude. Jolly was left in command of the camp. He said he'd heard enough speeches about Kurian tactics of fear never conquering the human spirit in his life. But he almost ordered Valentine to go.
If anyone deserves a good feed, it's you, Valentine. You've kept us in fresh eggs and vegetables for 3 months.
Moitana saved him from being ordered to attend. His wolf patrols were routed or posted, and this bit of Virginia was at peace. Though they had intercepted some high-ranking quislings scuttling north with a couple wagons of clothing and valuables, and Moitana needed orders. As the partiers had departed camp, Singh led the way with several other officers, some with hardy wives and husbands who'd come along for the march, plus select NCOs and regular soldiers, the wounded or those deserving of special consideration. Duvalier was waiting for Valentine when he entered his tent. She was reclining in his hammock, her boots off and her bony feet greasy with something that smelled of lanolin and mint. She dropped a Kurian newspaper bearing a headline about a rail accident in Kentucky.
What's got you down, Val?
I was in town. I saw a golden one. Thought it was on Ka. It wasn't.
That bites. I heard stories about him organizing the partisans.
Anka's not the only grog who could organize a revolt. This one wasn't as well spoken. I got about 3 words out of him. He's probably wary of strange uniforms.
This is still a big deal, Val. You helped make it happen. I remember you laboring over reports about Kentucky when we wintered. You had a stack of papers the size of... You remember?
Valentine didn't say anything, willing her to be as miserable as he was.
In a way, it's still Anka's victory. You decided Southern Command could march across Kentucky, what with the Kurians few and far between in the Legworm Ranch country.
I know.
Look, I should just say it. I was an ass to you back then. You were killing yourself looking for Anka. I thought you were wasting your time, tried to slap you out of it. Plus, we fought about that baby Reaper. Is it doing well? Did you tame it? Or him?
Blake's well enough. Growing fast. I don't think anyone but Narcisse could have brought him up.
Want to talk about Anka some more?
No.
I got a bottle. Want a drink?
I ordered everyone in camp searched.
If they can't locate someone, it's a lot harder to search them. You got some good guys here, but they're not that good.
Pour it out. I don't want liquor in the camp. We'll arrange passes soon so people can go into town if they want to get drunk.
I'll do no such thing. There's no swiping liquor. I had to buy that with some of Karis's funny money.
Strange that they took his coin. Or did you offer a little personal bonus to get the booze?
Fuck off. I've blown a few centuries to get over a bridge or through a fence, but I'm no whore.
Valentine retrieved his $10 piece from his pocket. It was crude, and it had nothing more than the word of some jumped-up Legworm rancher behind it. Maybe the citizens of Utrecht were swept up by patriotic fervor.
I sometimes think we fight just to keep from falling in love. So, you gonna dance with me at the glam-up? I'll get dressed. Ediac has a civilian skirt and a top she said she'd loan me.
I volunteered to stay in camp. Speaking of which, my 4 hours starts soon.
I'm not a fan of parties either. But I did go to the trouble of swiping some new underwear. Cute knit stuff, like lace from a fancy doily.
Allie, these people are patriots. It's not some KZ $3 store.
I guess so. They're making a very patriotic profit on fresh bread and pies for the soldiers who liberated them.
Do me a favor, stick close, okay? I want to talk to you when I get off.
That sounds kind of perverted for Sterling Major Valentine.
With the camp next to empty, his duty time crawled. So he spent it roving. He walked the posts, checked the firewood and water supply, saw to it that no one had dug the latrines, so they drained toward the food preparation area. The reserve supply dumps were still being built, and a mini backhoe was parked next to a partially dug-out foundation for an artillery magazine. Tseng had chosen the spot for their new base well. Utrecht stood on the heel of a short mountain range at a crossroads that would allow a shift northeast up either side of a mountain ridge or to the southwest. And there were further cuts east and west, old roads and disused rail lines that were in poor shape, but better than hacking one's way through woody mountains. At the last officers' meeting, Tseng had stated that the first order of business would be a new survey of the area. Tseng wanted to know every cow path and bike trail. Valentine's company would probably be put to work improving old roads or creating connecting trails. Valentine thought he saw the shape of the coming campaign. He guessed Tseng hoped to imitate Jackson's Valley campaign for the American Civil War near Winchester, just on the other side of the Appalachians, as a matter of fact, popping in and out of mountain passes and sliding up and down roads to catch the Kurian forces unawares. In the distance, Valentine watched some dozens of legworms grazing in a brushy area south of town, on the other side of a twisting, turning stream, where he saw some old collapsed roofs. Ever since the link-up with Karras' group of rebel tribes, Tseng had had his regulars learning to handle the creatures. Legworms didn't need much more width than a jeep, and they never got stuck in mud or hung up on a rock. He watched them feed their way into the tangle of bush and young trees. They'd soon have it grazed down into open country, potential pasture or field. Legworms were better than a bush hog. At the end of his duty, he made a brief report to Jala, who was dozing in a chair in his office near the headquarters tent. He turned the duty over to Nowak, then headed back to his tent. Duvalier was waiting. The soft, comforting aroma of a woman in the canvas-enclosed air was more welcoming than the thermos of coffee she opened on his return. Instead of some dripping trophy, she'd brought two big slices of cherry cobbler. She smelled faintly of sandalwood, too.
You snuck a little whiskey in this.
Just a touch, as they say here. I think we deserve a celebration, too.
Valentine sipped the coffee, thinking of Melita in Jamaica. The coffee had been real there. Had the emotional connection been fake? What was real, and what was wishful thinking, on both their parts, in this little hillside tent? Duvalier leaned on the tent pole.
You used to joke all the time about sexing me up. I think you're the only man who crossed the whole state of Kansas with a hard-on.
23 will do that to you. My balls did my thinking for me whenever you seemed approachable. Used to say, what was it?
Dream on, Valentine. There's a grand alliance forming down there, helped along with liquor and barbecue. I think tonight's a night for dreams coming true.
Valentine was tempted. He could forget everything, thrusting into her. He could find oblivion in satisfying lust, the way some men lost themselves in drink, or at the green gaming tables, or in swirling clouds of narcotics. So tempting. No more thoughts of Anka's face, those curious townies peering at him from behind quilted curtains, the apparently bottomless supply of alcohol. Valentine put his hands on her, placing a hand across the back of her neck.
But we don't believe.
I hope that's fireworks.
Valentine grabbed his pistol and sword. No comforting bursts of fireworks filled the mountain valley, but there were red flares firing in the air above the Green Mountain Boys' encampment. He couldn't see the town, but the torchlight glow in the sky over it was almost gone.
I've got to get going.
I know. Where do you want me?
If any of your fellow cats are in camp, round them up and report to Moitana's headquarters.
All officers report to the Brigade HQ. All officers report to Brigade HQ immediately.
It was a nice moment while it lasted.
It was.
He trotted a few feet over to Company HQ. Rand and Patel were already inside the two-pole tent, rifles at their side. Red Dog was running around, excited in the commotion, but not looking at all frightened. That gave Valentine some comfort.
I'm going to Brigade. Preville, come along in case I need a messenger. I've no news other than something's wrong. Assemble the men with full field kit and 3 days' rations. Make sure the reserve dehydrated food and ammunition reserves are handy. Get a meal into the men if there's anything hot handy.
Roger that, Major.
Patel was hunched over his boots. Preble patted back some rather straggly hair over his ears that made him look more than ever like a revolutionary intellectual. Valentine could rely on them.
Let's move out, Preble.
Valentine led Preble toward brigade headquarters. He could see the silhouette of Duvalier's head bobbing off toward the hunter's collection of tents within the larger encampment. Lights died out all over camp, and she vanished as a lantern was extinguished. He tried to let the red hair take his regrets with it. Moitana, Nowak, and others had already gathered, too many junior officers who missed the celebration thanks to privileges of rank. Major Bloom stood behind, looking like a pit bull waiting for the release. From her position, Valentine guessed she was the temporary senior for the guards. Jala's balding head glistened. He kept wiping it with a handkerchief.
There's been some kind of disturbance in town. We don't know anything more than that. Have you heard anything on the comms, Nowak?
Observers report the firing is dying down. There's still some torchlight and lanterns in the town square, but the rest of the lights in town are out.
Uh-huh. Are the lines to the Green Mountain contingent and Karas headquarters functioning?
Not strung yet. We're in radio contact with the Green Mountain troops. They're asking us what's happening in town, since we've got a better view. They've got a walkie-talkie distress signal, it seems.
All right. Defensive stance. Let's get the men to their positions for now. Where's Colonel... at the party, of course.
Valentine dispatched Preble to pass the word to Rand, met Moitana's eyes, and jerked his chin toward Jala. As everyone filed out to get their men to battle positions, some of which were only half completed, they were joined by Bloom and Nowak.
Your wolves haven't reported enemy formations, Moitana.
No, Major. The only thing out of the ordinary they reported was a lot of activity in an old mine north of here. Military-style trucks and command cars. Locals said it had been shut down for years and just reopened and was being garrisoned. Said it was because the guerrillas had wrecked a couple of other more productive mines and they had to reopen. Sang's got us keeping an eye on it, and the cat's taking a closer look.
You could hide a lot of men in a coal mine.
Maybe the Green Mountain boys aren't really the Green Mountain boys.
No, they're real enough, Captain Moitana. Lambert and Sing were expecting them. We've had progress reports.
Perhaps we should shift camp, Colonel. Move closer to the Karas Bunch, the Green Mountain boys. Right now, we can't support each other.
In the dark?
Old wolf trick, sir. Somebody's marked out our positions for artillery. Might be better if they wasted their shells on empty space.
I took a look at their positions this morning. They've got a good high hill to their backs.
I think the enemy would be firing on us already if they had our position. We don't even know what's happened in town yet.
Nowak. Roger that. Pickets are reporting Private Duel is coming in. He ran all the way from town. Says there's been a massacre.
No one else?
Just Duel, sir. He said they took away his rifle and his pants.
His pants? Get him up here.
Valentine had the uncomfortable sensation that Duel's missing pants were just the first oddly heavy raindrop in a storm to come. He could almost feel trouble gathering, like the heavy air in front of piled-up thunderclouds. Like an animal, he wanted to get away or underneath something. Duel was shoeless and footsore, a blanket wrapped around his waist. A guard regular, he'd been wounded by a grenade in the cleanup action after the fight at Billy Goat Cut. He still had his uniform shirt, though a blood spatter ran up the front to his shoulder like a rust-colored bandolier.
Just give it to me, Duel. Don't worry about military form.
Killed them all, sir. Colonel Sang and the rest. Roscoe next to me. They're all dead. They told me to tell you. It said that someone was to come into town to hear terms at dawn. They told me to tell you.
Hey.
The fellers with the squared-off black beards.
Shaped like this?
Yes, sir. Yes, Captain. That's just it.
What's this, Moitana?
It's the Moon Dagger Corps. Or elements of it. They all wear beards like that.
Moitana's face was as gray as the washed-out ropes in his hair. Valentine knew the name. Oddly enough, he'd heard it from Duvalier when they were discussing recent events in Kansas. They were some kind of special shock troops used to quell uprisings and had caused the 72 operation in Kansas to fall apart before it even got going.
Never mind that. Tell us what happened, Duel. Take your time.
It was a fine dinner, sir. Officers from the Green Mountain Troops were across the square from us, and the legworm guys were around the statue and on our left. Guerrilla troops, too. Only now I think they wasn't guerrillas, but turncoats. Like Texas and Okie Red Hands, only worse. And then King Karras, he gets up and starts one of those fine speeches of his.
Oh, hell. Get on the horn, Nowak. Find out what's going on now.
Nowak here. What's the alert? Roger that. Engine noise reported overhead. One plane.
Is the HQ dugout done yet?
It's just a hole at the moment, sir.
We'll adjourn there. Nowak, you stay here on comms.
Will do, Colonel.
The hole was only half dug. There weren't even floorboards. Their feet squelched uncomfortably into the mud. It was deep enough so they could sit with heads below ground level.
Sounds like that plane is getting closer.
Must be an observer. That usually means trouble.
Go on with your story, Duel.
Here, sir?
We've got little else to do.
Where did I leave off, Colonel?
Karras's speech. Do they really call him King Karras?
King of the Cumberland, some of those legworm fellers say, sir. It was a real good speech, I thought. Real good. He was just going on about mankind saying enough. And there was this bright blue flash from the podium. And he was just gone. Like lightning struck him, only there wasn't no bolt. And then the town square just sort of exploded, sir. Like a minefield wired to go off or something. Anyway, they blew up like mines. One went off right under the colonel's chair. I've always had decent reflexes. Otherwise, that grenade I tossed from the squad at the rail line would have been the end of me. Gunfire, then. A real sweeping fire. And they started cutting down everyone. Women with serving trays and beer mugs. Everyone. Only now that I think back on it, the guerrilla leaders clustered around the podium, they weren't blown up or shot. They were sort of clear from it in this little cement area with benches and a fountain. I think they all jumped in that old fountain. Wish we could have put a shell into it. The top half of the colonel was still sitting in his chair, tipped over like, you know, like when you're at the beach and the kids half bury in the sand. Only it was real. I tried to drag Roscoe into some bushes, but he was dead.
Just got the all clear.
From the sound of things, that observer had better things to do.
They picked themselves up and returned to the headquarters tent. Gamecock was there in full battle array, a big-handled bowie knife strapped to one thigh and a pistol on the other. Black paste was smeared on the exposed skin of his face and each bare arm. He had his hair gathered tightly in a food service net.
The whole bear team's ready to go into that town, sir. I got 22 bears already halfway up. We'll get Colonel Seng back safe.
Too late for that. I'm afraid he was killed in an ambush.
Then we'll pay them a visit to even the score. Just say the word.
No, they're probably fortifying the town now.
Sir, they told me to tell you what I saw. There wasn't anything like an army in that town I saw. Just maybe a company of these bearded guys and the guerrilla turncoats.
What else, Duel?
Well, the ones that surrendered. They took the prisoners and chopped their heads off. That big gold grog was taking off heads with this thing like a branch trimmer. I thought I was going to get chopped, but it turned out I was the only one left from the brigade. Colonel Gage drew his pistol and was shooting back, and they gunned him down. And a sniper got Lieutenant Nawai while he was wrestling with a red hand for his gun.
And they told you we'd hear their terms in the morning. I think we should wait.
Wait?
Well, I see it. The fight started. I think we can guess what their terms will be.
Javelin's almost 400 miles from Southern Command. The locals were supposed to support us, and now we've found that they're hostile. How long can this expedition survive without the support of the locals?
Gamecock sat down in a folding chair and took out his big bowie knife and a tiny whetstone. Frustrated, Valentine felt like he was playing a chess game where only his opponent was allowed to take three moves for his one. They'd be checkmated in short order.
Longer than it'll last if we wait on what the Kurians have dreamed up.
Javelin was named right, that's for sure. Thrown over the front rank of shields at the enemy. If it hits, great. If it misses, the thrower doesn't expect to get it back. Sorry, General Lehman, we missed.
Bloom and Moitana exchanged glances. They both looked to Valentine. What were they expecting? A Fletcher Christian moment? Valentine wondered just what was said about him in Southern Command mess halls. Valentine didn't want to think that Javelin's acting CO had his nerve shattered. Maybe he'd recover in the light of day. except by the light of day, it would be too late.
I'm willing to wait and hear what their terms are. They may allow us to just quit and go home.
Why would they do that? We're at the disadvantage now.
Perhaps their real target was Karras. Kurian regulars are good enough when suppressing a revolt by farmers with pitchforks and rabbit guns. They're not as successful against trained troops, except for in extraordinary circumstances, like Solon's takeover.
All the more reason to pitch into them.
I'll go and see what they have to say. Major Bloom, this is a little unorthodox, but I'm promoting you to command of the guards with a brevet for colonel. Radio to Lehman's headquarters for confirmation and orders about how to proceed. Do you think we can get a signal through, Nowak?
So the radio silence order...
I think the Kurians know we're here now, Nowak.
Thank you for your confidence, sir.
You know the regiment and commanded them when Gage was away. If something happens to me, you're the best...
Of what's left, Valentine silently added the unspoken words. Valentine didn't know Southern Command military law well enough to know whether a colonel commanding could promote someone to colonel in the field, and frankly didn't care. Nowak put down the handset.
Colonel, I don't think you should go. Let me get their terms.
They might pull one of their tricks.
All the more reason for me to go.
O'Doul, why did they take your pants? I can see your shoes, but...
Oh, I plain don't forgot. They said to tell the brigade commander, caught with your pants down. I thought they were nuts. He was laying there dead in the town square. I guess they meant you to get it.
Those were their words?
Yeah, caught with your pants down. I was to remind you.
That means something, sir?
It must be a coincidence. It's an old joke. Goes back to my days at the War College. A dumb stunt I pulled.
Has it come up recently?
We were telling stories over cigars... Right after that fight at the railroad cut, Colonel Singh, myself, Gage was there, Karras, a few of the leaders from the Legworm clans.
I remember, sir. The story about six-ass ambush. Five got away.
And one didn't. Forever branded as the one who couldn't get his pants up and tripped on his own belt.
I wonder if there's a spy in our ranks.
Dumb spy. To give himself away with a detail like that?
Either that... Or the Kurians want everyone looking over their shoulder, Valentine thought. They were better at sowing dissension than fighting. The meeting broke up, and Jala ordered Valentine to check the defensive perimeter of the camp. Everyone was nervous, so he took the precaution of using the field phones to let the next post know he was on the way as he left each post. He was checking the west side of camp when he saw a group of men. It looked like some sort of struggle. One had lit a red signal flare and held it high so the troops knew not to fire. Valentine trotted up to the mob. They were mostly regulars from the guard regiment.
Stop! Hold there! Who says?
Shut it, you! It's Major Valentine! Sir, we caught our spy!
The mob parted, and two men dragged another forward, one holding each arm. He already had a noose around his neck. The man was folded like a clasp knife, clearly gut-punched or kicked. They raised his face, using his scant hair as a handle. It was Brother Mark.
He was dressed all in black, sneaking off.
He always dresses in black. Let him go. Give him some air.
Oh, he's a spy for sure, sir.
God help me.
Let's hope so. Who arrested him?
I guess it was me, Major. Corporal Timothy Kemper, Bravo Company, 1st Battalion. Pickets under my command caught him sneaking out of camp.
The pickets didn't catch me. I hailed them and requested a guide to get me to Karras's encampment. For God's sake, tell him the facts, Corporal.
Stop that crying, brother. Karras is dead.
I'd heard there was some kind of treachery in town. I thought I should see to our allies. I'm sure they're as frightened as we are.
Who told you to do that?
I thought it was my duty.
Your duty?
My higher calling to unite the...
Save it. You should have checked with someone and had orders issued.
I've never had to ask permission to come and go, son.
With the noose now loose around his neck, Brother Mark rose to his feet, dusting off the plain black moleskin.
That's Major, not son.
I'm not sure where I fit into your hierarchy.
Under the circumstances, it would have been wiser to get permission and an escort.
You too. Come with me as an escort. I'll take our church man to headquarters and see what he has to say. Consider yourself confined to camp for now, brother.
I must be allowed to visit the other camps. We must hang together, or as Franklin said, we shall all surely hang separately.
Valentine saw no point in engaging the churchmen in a debate. They were already wasting time. Wasting words would just add insult to injury. Valentine took Brother Mark to the headquarters tent. Jala had pushed two tables together and spread out a map of Western Kentucky. He had the mission book, a set of standing orders that covered several contingencies, including loss of the commander and abandonment by the Legworm clans. Nowak was gone. Another officer was handling the communications desk, if a folding leg table covered by a tangle of wires connecting assorted rugged electronics boxes could be called a desk. But if anything, headquarters was busier than in the first shock of the alert. Complaints and problems were coming in from all points of the compass. It was just as well that they weren't under attack, Valentine thought. The artillery spotters couldn't communicate with the mortar pits. Two companies were trying to occupy the same defilade, leaving a whole eighth of the perimeter unguarded. Valentine ignored the assorted kerfuffles and explained what he'd seen, and stopped. He let Brother Mark do the rest of the talking. Jala apologized for the men being on edge.
But you must give me orders to contact our allies, it seems.
Do you think it's wise to just let them wander around under the circumstances, Colonel?
I wouldn't be wandering, Major Valentine.
You're right, Valentine, and you just named your own poison. Go with them. They say a Reaper hasn't been built that can sneak up on you.
That's what they say.
Besides, someone in uniform should be representing Javelin. Tell them that I've informed Southern Command of the situation and I'm waiting for orders. Until then, I'm free to act as I see fit.
That would reassure a bunch of nervous Kentucky worm riders. Valentine had heard rumors as a junior officer that the Kurians could befuddle key men through some sort of mental evil third eye, but had never attributed to mysticism what could be explained by stupidity. Jala's sudden plunge into routine and procedure, when circumstances called for anything but, made him reconsider his old attitudes.
You're a sharp instrument of good in his hands, my son. Thank you for getting the noose off me. These poor, anxious men were rather letting their passions run wild on them.
Valentine decided he would bring along the far blunter instrument of B with them, just in case. In addition to B, Valentine decided to bring Ediac along as well. Beauty sometimes calmed better than brawn. As they set out, Brother Mark graced them with only a single aphorism.
Let's be about God's work this night of fear and doubt.
He then stalked off toward the Legworm campsites, taking long, measured strides, for all the world like a hero in one of DeMille's old biblical videos they like to show on washed-out old 1080 screens in church basements on community night. Valentine almost liked him. He couldn't say whether the renegade churchman was crazy, a true believer, or simply the kind of man who always stepped forward when necessity called. He took care moving, God knows what might be prowling in the dark, with first B scouting while he made sure nothing was following him, and then swapping with the grog. The Legworm clans didn't even have anything that could be called a camp. They'd gathered their legworms together into five big clumps, feeding them branches cut and dragged from the woods, with a few more grazing at the borders of their camps. Their sentries and picket positions were two man pairs who lay behind clumps and lines of legworm droppings, the fresh deposits notched with little sandbags the size of small pistols supporting deer rifles. Behind the spotter sniper positions, more men stood ready to mount their legworms. Valentine had seen the mobile breastworks that legworms provided in action before. The riders planted hooks and straps in the fleshy, nerveless sides of their mounts and hung off the living walls, employing their guns against an opponent, using tactics that combined First World War trench warfare with wooden ship actions from Nelson's day. The Legworm clans were quick to blame Southern Command for not properly securing the town. Valentine conceded the point. The wolves had checked it out, and then the guards conducted a more thorough search. But whatever soldiers had been posted at key buildings and crossroads were missing, along with the rest of the celebrants. The meeting with the coonskin dispatcher was not going well. He glared harshly at Valentine through his one good eye. The other was a milky wreck.
I told Specs Karras this whole affair would go wrong.
free territories egg us into fighting with the Kurians? We're for it now. For it deep.
Valentine thought of correcting the man. He'd urged Southern Command to explore an alliance with some of the Legworm clans and support the guerrillas in the Alleghenies. He lost his train of thought, though, as a honey-haired beauty forced her way to the front of the throng.
Careful, Coonskin. He's bulletproof. Might just challenge you to a duel.
Tika.
Welcome back, Raynor. My life gets interesting whenever you show up.
Hello, Tika. Where's Zack?
He was at the party.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I appreciate your sentiments. I'm able to speak in my brother's place, with my dispatcher's authority. The bulletproof won't quit. Won't throw down their guns, won't run.
By the pinkening dawn, they reached the camp of the Green Mountain Boys, and Valentine was growing tired. The New England troops took the precaution of blindfolding the party before letting them into camp. B didn't appreciate being blindfolded, so Ediac offered to wait with her outside the lines. The Green Mountain Boys still had their senior officer, General Constance, who'd begged off the party because of a broken ankle. He looked like Santa Claus without the beard, sitting with his leg extended.
Thought we had a bit too much of an easy time getting here. Thing is, if a trap's been sprung, where are the jaws?
Have you decided on a course of action?
If I had, I'd be a fool to tell you now, wouldn't I?
I don't blame you for not trusting us, General. We're all wondering what's going to go wrong next.
They've got a twist on us, that's for damn sure, Major Valentine. Masterful. Suckering us out like this. Masterful. They've set us up. Now I'm wondering how they're going to knock us down.
With that unsettling thought, Brother Mark got a promise from Constance not to act without first consulting Javelin's headquarters. Under blindfold again, they were led back out through the pickets. But Valentine knew the sound of a camp being packed up when he heard it.